with Iraq back in 2002 and 2003. And there was just no check on that from the left.
Agreed.
Preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, I mean, there was just no, like, critical inquiry into, like, how, like, valid her whole Russian thing was. And so, like, it was just, like, going to get everyone further embroiled into this, like, massive clash between these world powers. And, like, the leftists would just be cheering her on instead of, like, really questioning, like, what we were getting into there.
So I have a question for you guys. What media sources do you trust in these troubled times in which we live? Will not seem to leave my mind. If any.
None.
4chan, obviously.
Well, but if you trust none, who do you trust to tell you that they're, like, you can't trust, like...
I'm like a New York liberal. I have a subscription to the New York Times, and I read that to read between the lines, but, you know, it's bullshit, you know, and I go on, you know, just, I don't know, sync books, a source of news, and, you know, and just, like, whatever I come across.
Please don't use SyncBook as a source of news. Oh my God. If that would be hilarious if SyncBook became seen as a news source. Look out, it's raining Jesuses. I don't know, like, it's raining metaphors. The archetypes are crazy today.
It's true, though.
But don't you think that, I mean, so I'm just, so, okay, so you, so none of them, but does, are there any, like, are there any, like, during the election season, were there any sources that you felt like, oh, I can go to this and there, give, I'm, like, this is what I'm going to judge the truth against? You said, like, the New York Times, you read, you know, you read between the lines on the New York Times, so that's kind of your ground zero of what they're saying the news is, and then you parse it. I'm just kind of curious among this whole group, because it seems like that's one of the big pieces of this, is like, who's creating the narrative and the story?
I think we're at a point, and this is where actually the Sync book, and I don't mean to brand it that way, but like the Sync head mindset, I think, is actually really helpful here, is that, you know, if Will Morgan says that Jim Carrey is resonating Dionysus and someone else says he's resonating Osiris and blah, 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 I'm sort of looking at all those perspectives, trying them on and sort of seeing, oh, I see how that could be. I see how that could be. I see how that could be. And never sort of, when you're trying to find something in this spectrum of reality tunnels that you can at least make certain sense of or read into. And I feel like with the news at this point, right, is there a news source that I explicitly would trust? Man, I'd be really hard pressed to think of one.
Maybe
I can give one example, just because I saw a thing today, and it was actually an overblown headline, but the idea, as everything is, but the idea that there was going to be, with Google, the idea of like Google or Facebook trying to police quote unquote fake news stories, which to me is just, obviously that's a way to censor. Oh, we, you know, is it a conspiracy theory? Well, that's fake. We're not going to show you that. They've been talking about this stuff for a while, but I saw with
that's
today,
a reaction though, because some people are saying, oh, it's Facebook's fault.
I've seen that. And that's bullshit. You know, that's bullshit. Wait.
Well, no, I don't know anything at this point, because
Eric Schmidt in the WikiLeaks to the Hillary Clinton campaign about how they're gonna basically chill for her.
Everyone wants to blame everyone except for the people who actually are.
I mean, like the fucking Dilbert cartoon just called this election more than anything in the Scott Adams.
What did it say?
I mean, Scott Adams said that Trump was going to win back in like a year ago, and he was basically the only one who did.
Michael Moore apparently did 8 months ago.
Yeah, him
well,
too.
Well, again, Michael, you know, so all these
people, and Michael Moore called the Rust Belt too.
Right. So you have guys like so Michael Moore, right? Who, I mean, these are just you know little bullet points, but you have Michael Moore tweets out about when he's saying he's supporting Bernie Sanders and saying how horrible Hillary Clinton is, and then turns around and goes, you know, puts up a thing, oh, what a great day I got to vote for Hillary Clinton, and I'm voting for this wonderful woman who's going to make such a great president. I mean, it's a classic fucking maneuver, but
okay, so here's a question that I have. So we'll table this for a second. There was a period of time when everyone was saying, oh, it's rigged. So it was like Hillary is the heir apparent, and it's just a matter of going through the motions of this thing happening. That really did not feel like that was what happened. It felt like the story the media was reporting was, this is what we think is going to happen. And then that clearly didn't happen. Right. Took everyone.
Yeah, that's why it's so amazing. That's why I'm like excited about this, because you know it's like it's just breaking away from the norm, you know, the shit we've grown up with, you know. Something's happening finally.
Right, is this evidence that there's no one at the wheel? You know, as we thought this was completely locked down, as I think, Doug, that's what you're trying to get at. The conspiracy theory that we've all just, at this point, assumed to be true is that there is no, you're going to get who they give you. If they decided Hillary Clinton was the next president, that's what you're going to fucking get. And this Trump thing seems to, one interpretation of it is that, no, actually, there was an election. And it turned out the way not that they expected, or not that the media expected, or that the political manipulators wanted, that there was a fair, quote unquote, fair election. Is that what you're getting? That this idea of, is there anyone steering the ship or puppeteering the election, or is this actually an upset?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a you know, if it's an upset, it's an upset between elites. You know, it's not like there was a populist upset. The biggest endorsement and the scariest endorsement that Trump got was from the police unions. When he got that, I got really scared. And I was like, oh. So he has the cops. No, this guy. So he's got that facet of the country, of the infrastructure on his side. And look at who he's putting in. Like, it's all these right-wing, you know, it's this... The right wing against the conservative wing. Like, the conservative wing is Hillary Clinton and Henry Kissinger. And then the far right wing is Donald Trump and the people he's bringing in. So we saw kind of like an upset between elite factions. I don't think we saw an actual populist upset.
No, precisely right. So I don't think anyone's questioning if the banking powers are still being represented. The it's a mafia move,
right?
Right.
But you know, I don't feel like the media duped the people that supported him, though. He duped them personally, right?
What?
Well, so like.
The Donald duped the far right, and
not the far right. The people that voted for him, they're trying to say.
I mean, like, I think Trump himself is more like a centrist, but like the people that he's tagging along with are like far right weirdos, and so that's the weird thing. So he's like Pope Francis tagging. Like,
my take is that he's just a giant ego that we elected an ego into office.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But that, so as far as what he represents is he just wants that kind of adoration, but he's willing to become whatever it is to receive that.
Well, he's like President Snow in the Hunger Games, you know? Did you watch the last one, the last Hunger Games, Doug?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I saw that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you got President Snow, and then you've got President Coin. And then so, like, Katniss figures out that President Coin is actually worse than President Snow because she, like, creates the illusion of change, but she's just going to reinstitute the Hunger Games again. So it actually becomes more important for her to kill President Coin, who obviously represents Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Yeah, because she's, like, this female who's trying to, like, putting forward this whole, like, era, this whole aura of, like, progressivism, but she's really just going to go back to the whole system that instituted the Hunger Games in the first place. So it actually becomes more imperative to keep President Snow alive and kill President Coin, and that's kind of what we saw in the election, where that's Julianne Moore in the last Hunger Games movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
So again, I want to come back here. So you, like, there are strong opinions about the election and about the media being off about it, but I'm still kind of curious. Okay, I'll say it. There were certain sources that I found myself going to sort of, like, cut through the bullshit narrative. So,
yeah,
like,
I mean, the media cooked all the polls. They all put, like, the Democrats up +7 on all the polls except the LA Times poll. And the LA Times poll was right in the end.
I saw it on the Young Turks.
Put it up +7.
Well, the Young Turks, they were talking about Trump being much closer than people thought.
Is that a video only thing, or do they have a website where you can click on headlines and stuff?
I believe they have a website. I'm sure they do. They must.
I've only ever seen their videos. I'm sure they have a website, but I've only ever seen their videos.
What do people think about them?
I've always liked Young Turks. I mean, I don't agree with them on everything, but yeah, I think they're genuine.
Well, so that's what's interesting.
On the WikiLeaks that I posted.
I guess the thing that you're trying to get at, Andras, I've always had a problem with alternative media organizations because I don't understand where they're getting their purified information from. You know, so like whether it's a Corbett and Media Monarchy guy, or if it's the Juice rap guys, you know, so where is their untainted source of information coming from? Because it sounds like, you know, they're just reading between the lines. They don't have a source that they trust necessarily. They just cobble together a bunch of different opinions to come up with their perspective.
Well, but I mean, like, say if all of them, like, reporting the superdelegates as voters before they had voted, you could see, okay, well, all of these, like, NPR is doing that, CNN's doing that, MSNBC, CNN, they're all doing that. Democracy Now! Isn't doing that. The Young Turks isn't doing that. Okay, well, then that's already, there's like a kink in the media narrative. It's not like that there's a new piece of information. It's that there's massive, like, across-the-board spin among certain media, and then you look for the ones that aren't lockstep around something that's misleading, right? Like counting the superdelegates. That's a strategy I use. So if I find someone who's contradicting that media narrative, it makes me think, doesn't make me feel like I can trust them all the time, but it makes me think, okay, well, they're not part of whoever's manufacturing consent. They're not a part of that, which could be, you know, an easy, you know, you create a couple of sources that give outlier information, and it makes it look like they're something to be believed. And, you know, parsing media seems like one of the hardest parts about this, like figuring out what is the truth. And I think it's going to get even tougher now.
Can I say something here? To answer specifically what I was going to say before. So I saw this thing about basically shutting down quote unquote fake news sources. And one of the things I saw on there was Occupy Democrats, which is just like a Facebook page, or maybe they have another branch of them, but, you know, usually it's just posting sort of stories or opinions or whatever, but is that, you know, fake? What is that? I mean, that's mind-boggling to me. I made that list. And then there was a website on there that I've enjoyed for years called the Free Thought Project. And what I particularly like about them is usually they're the ones, like, you know, something I learned years ago was you'd see a story on the news, and then you could go, there used to be easier to go to YouTube and find the full unedited footage, say from like a police dashboard cam or a store surveillance camera or whatever. And you could watch 20 minutes of unedited footage, and then you could see the stories that are being reported on CNN or whatever, where they're showing you a 30-second clip. Look where the guy punched the other guy. And, you know, you could see when you watch the full thing, it's a very different story. And this is something I used to do for myself, was try and find all those clips. And Free Thought Project is one that they're constantly posting. Here's the, you know, the unedited footage as much as they could. It seemed like just a fairly objective, like, we're going to get you these videos. If it's a police brutality or a police shooting, hey, here's the actual footage. And what is the spin of and so like in the example I was giving before, the quote unquote censoring fake sites, but even just from the spin, if that's where we're going, like, ideally,
someone's banging around. You got to mute yourself.
Ideally, you'd find a situation where they're presenting you as objective as possible. That's what journalism is supposed to be. Now they can still make up their facts.
Well, so with some of that criticism, though, it's that they're less journalistic sites and more like clickbait with ads. You know? So do we have, does the First Amendment apply to clickbait sites? Where it's just, so I guess that would be like one of my little barometers, Andras, is when I go to a news site and I see all the boobies and stuff, you know, so like, what are the things that Google thinks that I want to click on as far as advertising goes? You know, like those type of news outlets where that you, if you just scroll down just a teeny bit, there's like Lindsay Lohan, and there's, you know, all these different
7 secrets to getting your summer beach body.
Oh, you and your beach body, Alan.
So, again, what are some of the ones that you feel like on a regular basis you can trust? Like you felt like the Free Thought Project was one. I mentioned the Young Turks as being another one.
But where are they getting their information? So like when you mentioned Democracy Now!, they're doing their reporting. They are a news source.
Right? Well, I mean, I know that they, you know, they have people on the ground, like at Standing Rock. They were doing some good stuff from the water protector protests, with actual people like on the ground there reporting on stuff that wasn't getting reported elsewhere. Seems like they do a mix of that and sort of like hyper Jon Stewart, like media analysis. Like there's a media spin saying this, but they're leaving out this.
Well, so how many of the media journalists, the comedy media journalists that, I mean, there's a handful of them, too. Do they have an agenda? Can we trust them? So you've got John Oliver, you've got Trevor Noah, you've got Samantha Bee, and it seems like they all kind of come out of the Jon Stewart ilk.
Yeah, I don't. Based upon their election coverage, I don't trust any of them.
But because they themselves were fooled?
Because, honestly, my barometer during the election was if you treated Bernie Sanders' campaign like it was a joke, then, you know, while he was filling stadiums and raising more money than everyone else, then you were part of that. You were part of of creating a narrative that was meant to mislead. And I feel like all three of them did that. and Colbert as well, and some, and Larry Wilmore before he got taken off, even though I really liked him. Yeah, I didn't think any of them were, did their job. There was a lot of punching down. And it was disappointing. It was like listening to NPR and hearing them completely ignore Bernie Sanders. And you're like, wait, you're giving a lot of time to Donald Trump. You're ignoring Bernie Sanders. Why? And it's because there's a media narrative being crafted.
Is it a media narrative or is it a corporate narrative?
They're the same. Well, a corporate media narrative, like the media that are owned by corporations or funded by corporations that.
Right. I mean, his message was so exciting because it really was progressive.
Andras, can I ask a question? Just the way you described Bernie Sanders' campaign of they treated his campaign as a joke, and yet he was filling stadiums. I'm just curious, when you said that, it occurred to me Donald Trump, his campaign was treated as a joke, though he was filling stadiums.
There's a difference. There was a difference in the kind of joke that it was treated as. The joke in the Bernie Sanders one was like, well, he's not even worth talking about. So it wasn't just like, ah, ha, ha, he's a joke. It was, he doesn't exist. This didn't happen. There was a piece that they kept talking, they keep mentioning it on Democracy Now! When they're talking about this, that during one of the big primaries that Bernie won, they showed footage of everyone's post-election talk, but they spent more time, the only one they didn't show was Bernie Sanders, and while Bernie Sanders was talking, they had the cameras on Donald Trump's empty podium, as a perfect metaphor for so it was a different thing. Like, Donald Trump was treated like an exciting joke that was worthy of a lot of news time, like sort of dangerous. Whereas Bernie wasn't treated like he was dangerous. He was treated like he was and it's not even like Bernie. Who cares about Bernie Sanders? It treated all the people who supported him like they didn't exist, like they were a joke, like they weren't news. And it was clearly news, right? I mean, he was beating Hillary Clinton in the states that ultimately she needed to win this election.
Trump is a master media manipulator. Do all this free promo just for him, saying all these outrageous things and repeat it hour after hour. They don't agree with it. Like, somebody out there is going to agree with it. And so he just knew how to play the media perfectly.
But at the same time, there's a few other pieces going on there. There's the Clinton camp being pretty confident they can beat Donald Trump, so encouraging their pals in the media to elevate him because he's a weak candidate. So, I mean, in that sense, I guess he manipulated the DNC as well. I don't know. It feels like it's giving him too much credit.
Yeah, I think so.
Master salesman, though. That's basically this whole thing. Just being this master manipulator. I mean, the stuff he did to him would have sunk any other candidate, but he's just unstoppable.
Well, and that's what I think.
Andres's point is right. What point? Who's complicit in making him unstoppable? So, that's a good question. Jason, I totally agree with your point.
There was a quote
from Trump saying years ago that if he were ever to run, I'd just run as a Republican because those people will eat whatever bullshit anyone throws at
them. Actually, I saw it. Yeah, apparently. That's a fake quote. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Well, see? Again, why do you trust your sources there? But I mean, it's clear that's what he did. It's not an actual quote, but it's certainly a pretty accurate interpretation of the situation.
It's right. Well, he doesn't behave like a conservative, so that's why it appears true.
Well, I mean, if you're getting up on stage and saying, "Yeah, I the Bible. I love the Bible. It's my favorite book. It's my second favorite book," or whatever. It's like, I remember. So I'm living in Virginia near one of the Christian colleges that he, like, but early in his campaign that he showed up at, where he made this speech where he completely fumbles through saying how much he loves the Bible and how he reads it all the time, and then was like completely misrepresenting or like misquoting things. And I'm like, well, these people are got to be like, they're going to call him out on this, right? Like, it's so clear this guy is bullshitting you about this thing that you love. You're going to call him out on it, right? And I just kept waiting for that to happen. But so in one respect, yes, Jason's right. He was able to be like, hey, I'm totally on your side, guys, and they ate it. And then Andras is also right, though, is that it's not that he's just a master manipulator of the media, because they are equally complicit. And maybe that's part of the manipulation, right, is, hey, you need the fucking ratings. I'll do something.
But that's the whole thing. Is like, if you know, like, it's sort of like the idea, like, when, like, a quote indie film becomes a huge hit, and you're like, wow, that was amazing how that happened. Oh, but they were signed by Miramax a year ago, who created this aura of an indie film, but nothing's, like, you don't get into 500 or 1,000 theaters if you're just an indie film. By the time you're in 1,000 theaters, someone signed a deal somewhere. You know, like, the idea, there aren't, like, you can't be a grassroots success that it becomes ubiquitous across all media, or else that would have happened, I don't know, going back to my time touring, that would have happened to Ani DiFranco instead of her turning down all the deals, then they made Alanis Morissette into that thing. Because you don't become Alanis Morissette unless you sign the deals. You don't become Beck unless you sign the big deal, no matter how much you pretend, like, there's a pretense that you're indie. And my point in all this is saying that, like, the idea that all of these individual news sources all just couldn't help themselves and individually got caught up in the excitement around Donald Trump saying that Mexicans are rapists and forgot to be journalists at any point and call him on it, that they all fell for that. That doesn't happen. There's a narrative that everyone got behind at some point. And I think it's that they all were like, oh, well, no one's going to vote for Donald Trump. Like, Black people aren't going to vote for him. Hispanics aren't going to vote for him. Women aren't going to vote for him. Democrats aren't going to vote for him. Everyone's going to vote for Hillary. So let's play up this clown and then get ready for Hillary Clinton, which is what we all expect to happen. And in the midst of that, what I see is, like, the far right and the cops and some smart people in the Republican Party who also knew about voter purges with, now that there's no Voting Rights Act, saw an opportunity and pulled an electoral, bloodless, so far, coup. You know, through the ballot box, which is supposedly democracy. But if you look at all, like, have you guys checked out Greg Palast's stuff?
Is he the Rolling Stone guy?
No, that's Matt Taibbi. Greg Palast, he's the guy who wrote the Best Democracy Money Can Buy. He's been breaking, important news stories in America for years and had to go work at The Guardian in London because he couldn't get any of his stuff done here. But he just came out with a film and some pieces about the voter purges, and they're purging people, like, Black and Hispanic voters off the rolls. Like, if someone's name is James Jefferson, they'll find all the other James Jeffersons and purge in a certain area and purge them all because they could be people trying to vote twice. And that was responsible for hundreds of thousands of votes of voters being purged in the states where Hillary was supposed to win and she lost, or win and she lost. But so like Greg Palast, that's a source of news of like an independent journalist who I trust him to be. He's been right enough times that I trust him. So maybe I'm just more of a news junkie than you guys are. I'm so curious. I want to know where the sources are, because everyone seems to be pretty savvy about and sophisticated about how these things work, how elections work, and having pretty sophisticated opinions about.
But so here, do you subscribe to a newspaper and like, read?
This stuff that I just
got. I mean, I think we're all getting our news from the same sources.
Go ahead.
So continue.
Jason, can you finish? Good. I didn't hear it. You didn't come through. Say it again.
Oh, I just said I'm a news junkie too.
So
people mad a lot.
What are the sources that
I have
you
a
like?
Subscription to Harper's Magazine, and I also get The Atlantic, but I don't think I'm going to resubscribe because it feels like it's just not very substantive. But I will still check out all those things online. So I will look at New Yorker pieces. All the NPR stuff feels valid. Definitely, you know, whatever is linked to. But when I bounce to a site that has a ton of what amounts to clickbait ads, then I know that I'm not in a place that I'm very comfortable with as far as taking what they're saying very seriously.
Jason, where do you get your news? What are your sources that you really like, that you feel like people aren't as aware of, maybe?
I guess it depends on, like, what's going on. I mean, obviously, like, the Facebook source, if you can, like, go through like where people are getting their stuff. Like a lot of stuff like comes up on before anywhere else, and especially this election. And I mean, you candidates like referring to Ford, like, it's just really crazy these days. How this like and where it seems to actually influence on things.
The Breitbart guy.
Not that I would like agree with any of these guys say. It's just weird how like things on like memes on there like turn up on Facebook like 24 hours later like clockwork. And you even got like Hillary Clinton like coming out against like Pepe the Frog or whatever, and it's just crazy.
Do any of you listen to Counterspin?
I usually went to like more than anything else.
I can't tell if you're cutting
like when the WikiLeaks, like the people on like 4chan and Reddit were the ones that were really like pouring through the emails looking for stuff. And like things that they would come up with would always go on the mainstream media 24, 48 hours later. And so if you really wanted to know what was going on, you had to go to those sites.
And that was my point, Jason, about like say the Free Thought Project. It's like, what the ideal situation is not to go to the person telling you what's in an email leak, but to go to the data, right? So it's like, are you going to spend the time and sift through emails, or are you going to tune into NPR and have them say, if they even mention any fucking emails, are they going to tell you, oh, you know, I saw someone say,
oh, yeah, oh, look, I'm all about primary sources.
What's up?
I'm all about primary sources, so like
that's
like
precisely
that.
That's precisely my point. So you know, and in those, these are specific examples that I gave, like of if you have actual recordings of something, or you have the email leaks, you can actually go to those primary sources. All my fucking like old liberal friends from New York all were sharing this article that was like, oh, look what they found in Hillary's email leaks. It's a guacamole recipe. Ha 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 ha. You know, and it's like, really, fuckers? Like,
well, so what if there isn't something to what she says, though, about a vast white right wing conspiracy?
Of course there is.
Well, so
there's a vast right wing conspiracy, and she's part of it.
Yeah, she wanted so badly to be a part of it. You know, there's a vast right wing conspiracy, and they don't like me.
Right.
But, right.
I want to be at their party. I've done everything. I've killed all the right people. I've fucked all the right people. I've screwed over and scorched all the earth they asked me to, and they still don't fucking like me.
Misogyny.
And that's what it comes down to, is that people just didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, like, Trump got the same amount of votes that Mitt Romney did. But it's
and
just like
she's
people
gotten
didn't
more
come out
votes
to vote for
than
Hillary Clinton.
Any president in history except for Barack Obama.
But it's also, was it a higher population?
Yeah. Barack Obama also lost.
I think it has. It speaks to turnout.
So that's funny, right? So here's a little
voted for Trump as they voted for Mitt Romney.
Here's a little meme thing I saw today or yesterday that I thought was hilarious. Was a guy saying he goes, "It's funny, all the people who told me for the last however many months that my third party vote was meaningless are now telling me that my third party vote cost them the election." You know, if only instead of voting for Jill Stein, you voted for Hillary Clinton or whatever. You know, it's like it was just a funny little joke, but there's this funny truth to that of.
Yeah. Well, people are also saying that Hillary stole votes from Jill Stein. So apparently I voted for Hillary anyways.
So I want to go back. So, Doug, you feel like NPR is a valid news source?
Yeah.
Have you noticed any kinks in the, like, for me, during the election, it seemed like there were some massive kinks in it. Again, in terms of...
Are you talking about the I can't even think of what it's called. What is it called? The primaries? It's the primaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I was paying attention at that time, is the thing. I went through a period this year where I was, like, really just not tuned in to... I mean, so I completely agree with you. I think Idaho had its largest... it might be the world's largest caucus in history. They filled an entire sports arena with Bernie supporters who wanted to nominate him to be the, you know, the Democratic candidate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he definitely had this populist wave of support.
And then just the way NPR covered it was so, again, just like, it felt like, you know, what you hear about Pravda from the state television or state news source of like old, you know, the old USSR, that, you know, that they were just, you know, it's the Orwellian thing, 2 + 2 = 5. Like there would be, you would be in an area where there would be a massive rally and thousands of people would go, and Hillary Clinton couldn't draw anything. But if you listen to NPR, it sounded like she was, like they would be at her rally and it would sound like there were a lot of people, and they would not talk about Bernie at all except to say something dismissive and then move on to talking about Donald Trump and saying whatever crazy thing he said to about Chris Christie or any of these people who are now part of his cabinet.
Yeesh.
Yeah, and so the people who went out for Bernie didn't go out for Hillary, and that's just basically how this election ended up. The people who voted for Barack Obama didn't vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. And I don't think you can just say, like, a lot of people think it's but like a sexist thing, but I think if Elizabeth Warren had run, everyone who voted for Barack Obama would have voted for Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, you can't just put a fucking slap a vagina onto a machine gun and call it progressive.
Pull that quote.
What's that?
Pull that quote. For your film. Yeah.
So what's interesting is, regardless of my feelings on some of it now, I mean, in 2008, the Ron Paul campaign, you know, I sort of was really into that. And I would go to these things that were like that. And it was so frustrating at the time because the internet was still not as, you know, it was pervasive, but it wasn't ubiquitous, you know. And to go to something to see the drastic fucking difference and to have it be ignored was so frustrating. And all I can say is I sympathize, you know.
Well, April just came through and laid her two cents on me. She was saying that older Democrats were really nervous of Bernie and the S-word, socialism. And that...
You know, but if you went to the... If you were at the rallies, it was maybe older rich Democrats, but not older working class Democrats. And the majority, I think... And it's, again, what's older? Like, I'm almost 50 years old. Right. The people who were my peers were... Generally,
she was saying that her mother was nervous.
A lot of older Dems were not nervous. A lot. I've heard a lot of people say they were. It's the word.
It's the word.
I think it's one of those weird things where people are worried about that other people will be worried about it. But, I mean, my mom is an older Democrat. She never had any problem with it. It's like one of those things, like I remember the WTO protests when the labor rally joined the sort of young environmentalist, you know, radical anarchist kind of rally. And it was this, like, when it comes to challenging like TPP or WTO or sort of just global corporatism, I think people would rather, you know, again, people would, they, when they made it clear, people would rather have had a democratic socialist than a corporate neoliberal, or else Hillary Clinton would.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing where like the Democratic Party doesn't really stand for anything anymore. It's just like two different football teams competing against each other to see who can like satisfy the most voters and get into power. And there's no like real progressive policy behind that. And that was kind of like the whole paradigm that Hillary kind of stood for. So, like, with her defeat, maybe, like, an actual, like, progressive policy can come out of that and put to bed this whole, like, kind of like football game that's been being played between the two parties.
Which is kind of the excitement that William was speaking to. But at the same time, it makes me so nervous.
Fucking A.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, I don't want, it's, you know, like the... Like the bad ayahuasca trip where all the badness, you know, like breaks off, you know, it's like, well, but you still have to go through that nasty experience to get to the other side. And in reality, that's really unpleasant and really, really unpleasant for people who are less fortunate than the people on this call.
Mm-hmm. I mean, corporations just realize that the best way to like co-opt the left is just take it over completely by, like, you know, financing all the candidates. And that's what really, really saw with, Hillary's backers and everything. It's just, like, co-opting it for same sort of corporate control. And that's been there for a while, really.
So I know this has been analyzed to death, but like with this hindsight, I think the question of, we know what the Democratic Party was, a completely dominated party politics. The Donald Trump thing, Andras, you were making the point about the indie film, but he's certainly signed on to Miramax or whatever. It would seem the Republicans had their pet projects that they wanted. Again, this might be just sort of a post-game breakdown here, but like, do you think the Republican Party lost its the ability or nerve to pull that Hillary Clinton type thing? They didn't force Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz on the country, but they were willing to make a deal that still worked for them? Or what are your thoughts on the idea that he's still at odds with the Republican Party, quote unquote?
Who are you asking?
I was mostly asking you, but I'm obviously anybody.
Well, you know what? Anything I say about that is going to be informed by nothing but prejudice and, just guessing, conjecture. Because I don't understand the people who vote for him. I can't believe that the number of people who did vote for him did, even though it's probably turns out to be under 20% of the country really is down with his agenda. I don't buy the idea that the majority of the country is down with him, but I guess, I'll go back to when I saw that he got the police unions. It was his first legitimate endorsement. Everyone was like treating him like a joke. And there was something about that in this time when we know that the police, there's this whole the Black Lives Matter and the police face off and the Blue Lives Matter. And that when they put their money behind Trump, there was something there. There was some sort of like weird, scary legitimacy. I mean, one of the most unpopular and corrupt organizations in, and toxic organizations in the country, the police unions, the ones who fight to make it impossible to prosecute bad cops. So I feel like at that point, and I don't remember when that was, but I felt like at that point, for me, what I was witnessing, he became more serious. And to me, that's where the deal was signed. But again, that's just like me parsing no firsthand information other than that news announcement and my, projection onto something I don't know anything about, which is only marginally less so about the other stuff, just because I pay a lot of attention to Democratic politics. I grew up and around a lot of Democrats, so I feel like I talk about that in a way I can't. Like this, the Trump thing is insane to me. God.
Yeah. So the same way, like the Democratic Party, again, we're talking the party itself, the institution and the power, the political powers behind that brand picked Hillary Clinton fucking 8 years ago to be the successor. And there was never a question, no matter how much Bernie Sanders or anyone kicked up dust, they were not going to let that go. What's interesting, I don't know if the Republican Party was as confident in who they were going to put up there. But Andras, you and I had a conversation a while back, and when it was still the question of, was Trump a joke or something to be worried about or all that sort of stuff. And I was telling you how Melissa's father was like, I'm sure he's registered as a Republican. He hates the Republican Party as much as probably all of us do, but maybe for different reasons. but old school sort of Republican Party, very, very politically active, going to all the state meetings and, you know, all that sort of shit. And he said he has seen over the course of his life doing that at the state level, that the parties send out all their, you know, like people were talking about, oh, look, Newsweek put out that cover of Hillary Clinton. They shipped all these magazines. They paid to have them printed and shipped them around with Hillary Clinton, Madam President. I'm sure you guys all saw that.
Well, they do both.
The same. What's up?
They do both.
They do both, but they shipped the Clinton.
Oh.
If you actually look at the
story.
Yeah,
they were so sure that they shipped those.
Exactly. Exactly. As to be sure, to be safe, they print both, but they shipped the Clinton. That was the point there. Anyway, in the same respect, what he was saying to me was, at some point, I have no sense of time really of when this was, but I remember it was long enough ago that it was still a question. And I told you the conversation I'd had with him was they had already shipped all the state and county parties, all their, I'm pretty sure it was Ted Cruz materials. They were so sure it was Ted Cruz that they'd already shipped everything out. And he, like, so he, that early, you know, that point in the thing, he was like, oh, they've already decided who they're going to be. And he thought it was going to be the same thing as that Hillary Clinton. It's not even really a thing anymore, right? You just, they're going to put up there whoever they want. And that's just one sort of, third hand sort of story here, but that's interesting to me that the Democrats held tight to that. Whatever. It's just, again, this is all just parsing the bullshit and not really not in the meat and potatoes, but I'm just sort of curious what that means of not so much of, okay, I don't really care. Is he an outsider? Is he an insider in the sense of like, is this refreshing? Is this whatever? But the question of, you know, the Terrence McKenna, you know, saying about the conspiracy theory that there's, you know, how it's refreshing to think that everything's controlled because at least it means someone's steering the ship, you know, or Alan Moore saying something similar. The conspiracy is reassuring because you're like, oh, well, we already know what the system is. Yes, it's a controlled, manipulative piece of shit, oppressive system, but at least I understand how it works. The question I think that comes up with Trump here is it's no different of a knife up your asshole, but the question is this evidence of the conspiracy, the puppeteering not being as, I don't know, solidified or specific as we've kind of grown accustomed to thinking. Does that make sense?
Is there a shadow government?
Of course there's a shadow government. It's a question, are they in complete control?
No, but so, okay, that is my question. Is there a shadow government?
Well, the media is used to crafting a narrative and having that.
So you guys would say, you would go on the record saying, yes, there is a shadow government.
Your flaws in the system coming forward.
Jason, please repeat that. I'm sorry.
And so in the media narrative, I mean, Hillary was the inevitable choice. And then so they cooked all the polls to fit that narrative. But
no, I think they were just out of touch.
They did cook the polls, though. They oversampled Democrats heavily. They didn't.
Okay, you're right. But I don't know that when you say cooked it, it seems like they're trying to create a result.
Well, they were so confident that they convinced themselves of the truth of.
Sure. They got stuck in their own echo chamber.
Consciousness. That there's. Hillary had. Right, right. Echo chamber where they had a narrative. This narrative had to be the only narrative. They cooked all the polls. Well, it's just like it back in 2012. All the Republicans cooked all the polls to make it look like Mitt Romney was going to win. But you're just figuring out that all the magazines are left-leaning in the same way that all the news sources you read are just left-leaning, so you didn't notice that until the Democrats did the same thing the Republicans always did.
Right, you're so far inside your own, right, even as the consumer of the media, you're so inside your own echo chamber that you don't know the difference.
Right, basically, it's exactly the same thing with Mitt Romney. Like, back in 2012, the Republicans were just, like, so blown out, they had to, like, really go back and reevaluate everything about their party in order to come back swinging 4 years later.
But see, in this instance, though, I think you could say the media, and you would say, like, with the capital M media, they were pretty sure that they knew what was going on. That, like, you're
saying. Yeah, but, I mean, they were, but that's the whole thing, is that, like, at what point, like.
Did you guys watch the Adam Curtis documentary that just came out? Did anybody watch that one?
Hypernormalization?
Yes.
I'm an hour into it, yeah.
Well, okay, the interesting thing about that thing is that, like, it goes into, like, how Gaddafi was just this completely innocent patsy that the United States took down, but they say nothing about how, like, instrumental Hillary Clinton was in doing that. Like, they don't mention Hillary at all in that thing at all. It's just so crazy, because, like, Hillary was the one who took down Gaddafi, and she, like, completely boasted about that. They just don't mention her at all, but they do mention Donald Trump, and it's just crazy, like, why don't they mention her and how instrumental she was taking down Gaddafi?
Well, he's not here to answer.
Well, doesn't that, so that goes to painting? That goes to painting the narrative again. It's
right.
Right. You're gonna keep your chosen saintly figures as saintly figures, you know.
It does a good job of showing how, like, Gaddafi did literally nothing wrong. Like, he was just this completely innocent patsy, just got taken out by the military-industrial complex. And, you know, it's entirely unlike Hillary Clinton's State Department.
Hey, Kaylee, are you actually there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What are you thinking, ma'am? I know we spoke a little bit.
Well, how much credence do you guys give the idea that potentially, I mean, it does really seem like I don't know what you want to call it, you can call it the establishment or the shadow government of the deep state or what have you, but it does seem like it was pretty. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I got duped like everybody else. I thought for sure that she was just going to get installed in there, no holds barred. But I wonder how instrumental the WikiLeaks things were, because it almost seems like a possibility that at the last minute I don't know whoever the powers would be are. I don't want to give it that much credence, really, but it almost seems like at the last minute, maybe she was kind of dropped because it would have been too much of a scandal, too much to handle, too much flack. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I do think it's interesting that conversation has stopped. Right, like it's.
Oh, you mean the emails are not? They're no longer important because she did not succeed.
Correct.
Like, well, or just that they didn't indict her, or that the FBI said that they didn't find any, or I guess they said that they didn't find anything that they would have charged her on criminal activity. Not that the FBI can actually indict her; they can put a request in, but they don't actually have the power to do that themselves. But there was this sort of whitewash over it. As far as, like, they didn't find anything, essentially, which is bullshit, in my opinion. But yeah, that's sort of like, I don't know, it seems to have been thrown under the rug for the time being.
Well, precisely. So I've been through enough election cycles since I've been into conspiracy stuff or had that sort of cynical mindset that I've watched. When, you know, oh, suddenly there's a swine flu epidemic, there's a fucking anthrax scare, there's a fucking terrorist attack, there's a this, there's a that. There's, you will watch a news story get pounded down your fucking throat, and then the election's over and that story's gone.
Right.
And I don't mean that to say that there's nothing incriminating in the WikiLeaks stuff. I'm just saying it is, at this point, I feel like maybe I shouldn't be surprised that that's how that turned out, you know?
Here's the thing, though. Like, I'm not sure. Like, this is this weird narrative that at some point Hillary had this, had popular support, and then there were things that you could do to decrease it. Like, did the second FBI investigation at the end of this whole, like, election cycle that had the DNC, like, blacking out sections of the convention and, you know, all this stuff that they, the weird stuff that they pulled with Bernie, that it, like, and her just being generally unpopular, that cost her significant enough votes in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania that it would lose her the election. I think it's just like another sort of thing that people, that there was something going on. There was some weird politics going on there, but I don't think that cost her votes. To me, it really keeps coming back to the voter purges. If you look at it, hundreds of thousands of voters in it who are innocent of anything being purged in those states, people who were likely to be Clinton supporters. But anyway, so yeah, I don't think the FBI thing, I can't see how that made a difference in whether or not she got the votes that she needed to get in the places she needed to get them.
I do think that's a fair point. I just wonder if,
well, I think the conventional wisdom is that it was just the fact that Trump actually went to the Rust Belt states instead of just assuming they would be an inevitable win.
Well, so let's talk about that. We've all probably thought a little bit.
This is exactly what Obama did back in 2008 to beat her. And so, like, there's just, like, the fact that she's just completely out of touch and tone deaf.
Well, in a lot of places that people voted for Obama in this election, they came out for Trump in this election too. So that's an interesting thing out there.
But
do you think that's part of the, like, Obama offered change? Like, it's that swing state. Like, I don't care what it is, as long as it's different. Like,
I think that should definitely be a part of it, yeah.
I mean, I've spoken to people, you know, just at my job or whatever, just like casual conversations where most people are pretty, you know, they're young, fucking, quote unquote, progressive people that, you know, are, oh, this is terrible. And then you have the occasional person that's like, well, I've heard multiple times, well, I don't know, maybe this isn't a bad thing, you know, just it's something different. It's, you know, so.
Well, I mean, it's like Michael Moore said, he actually went there and it was like, I'm going to impact on anyone who moves your factories to Mexico. And that's a lot better than Hillary not even coming there and just talking about identity politics and like appealing to minorities.
Our system is designed.
That's not going to.
So that he definitely knew how. I mean, so like that's what seems so ridiculous to me, where you're appealing to a large number of people, but in some instances, a few number of people actually have more power because their vote is worth more in terms of our system. You know what I'm saying here?
Yeah, but I mean, that's how Obama won over Hillary back in 2008. It's like he went to Idaho. And he went to all the little states, and he took all their electoral votes, and Hillary went to the big states and didn't really care. And that whole, like, really disconnected ground game. She's like the Microsoft of candidates, basically, where she's, like, big and lumbering, and she's everywhere, but she's not going to, but then like an operating system like Android comes along and just like completely undercuts her. Sorry, I'm being a little nerdy there.
No, it's good.
Just like, yeah, she's like Microsoft Windows, and then like someone like Obama is like Android.
Right.
Like completely like exploits an avenue that she doesn't anticipate and gets shut out.
Wait, you think Obama is Android? I thought Obama was Apple. It's the like...
Okay, yeah, Obama is the iPhone, and then Donald Trump is Android.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Obama's totally Apple. He's like, hey, yeah. I'm cool, and I'm for all the people who care, even though I'm made with slave labor and I'm destroying the fucking planet and you know, massive slave factories to get you here. Just go with the fucking...
But he's presidential, at the very least. He's presidential, yeah, and he has class. And
everything is really smooth.
Like every fucker, I'm sorry.
So here's something. Let me. I actually have a unique perspective. I grew up in northern Idaho.
Do you remember the you know? Do you remember when Obama? There was a fucking thing early on where someone said he was a well-spoken black guy, and what a little fucking outrage that was, right? But honestly, every fucking person who says, man, this guy's got fucking class and he's so presidential, to me, it's the same thing. You're saying the same fucking thing. You're saying he's a well-spoken black guy.
No. I'm saying that we just listened to Trump speak. You put them next to each other and you realize what we're in for 4 years.
And I don't bomb the shit out of anything. I don't give a fuck as long as he looks like what I want him to look like. And I think
whether... Hey, you guys are just shouting over each other. Take your turns.
Whether intentional or not, I think it is an incredibly... It's the racist part of our society that is proud of that. We don't give a fuck what he does. We just like that he sounds the way he sounds and looks the way he looks. And it's incredibly fucking racist.
No.
It's incredibly fucking ignorant. And...
Do you think that he is a good person? Would you want your kids to go and spend time with him?
No.
Do you don't think he's a good person?
I wouldn't trust my children with him, no.
Okay, I think I would. I would. I think he's a good person in doing a job that's really difficult that you end up becoming. Like, driving the Death Star is not going to be easy for anyone. But Donald Trump, on the other hand, I would not let anywhere near anyone that I care about. I mean, the grab him by the pussy comment, I really think is super revealing. That is who he is. It's not locker room talk. Like,
we all know who Donald Trump is.
And so that's what I mean by this person has class. I'm not saying, oh my, this person. And so what the comment that I was going to make is that I did grow up in a really, really racist part of the world. And the reason why it's so racist is because there was a strike where the only place to enforce the strike was the Buffalo Soldier Regiment that was in the area. And so you have one whole town in Wallace locked up in a barracks, an open-air barracks, and the wardens were these black soldiers, and that resentment lasted for like 100 years. And so I grew up in that. Well, I came from a different part of the world though, and so I wasn't brewed in that tea, you know, but I had the perspective of being in it and seeing. So on my Facebook feed, because Facebook is so weird where you end up with people from elementary school and high school in your feed, you can see, oh, yes, these are racist people, and he is pushing all the right buttons for them.
What I'm trying to say, and this is a hard thing to say, but I'm saying, do you realize it's well-intentioned, but your racism is just as strong? And what I mean by that is
Did you think George Bush was well-spoken? Because I kind of thought that he sounded like a clown. But when you have someone that embodies the office and is actually presidential, you know, you can see they're genuine. Like, oh, this is authentic. He commands the room.
Or is he just a really good actor, though? I mean, because that's a possibility as well, right? I mean,
well, that's why Reagan was successful.
Yeah, I'm gonna side with Doug here, but it's like he's like Jimmy Carter, and he's just like a pushover to like all the hawkish people in the State Department who just want him to like.
Well, what does that say about his character, though?
Well, right, that's the criticism of the right is that he's just a pushover, which is certainly like valid. But I mean, the right is of course going to say that he's not like aggressive enough. But
was the Hillary complaint that he didn't have his hand on the rudder, that the ship has been rudderless for the last 8 years? I think I may have seen that pop up.
No hand on the fucking tiller.
No, yeah. Well, he's been, you know, he's definitely had his hand at the rudder, and it's been the same. And
yeah, I mean,
in the sense that it's the same. He's heading in the same direction that the Bush administration was heading, and where a potential Clinton administration was heading. It was the neoliberal, ever constant move in that direction. But I will say, I got to agree with Doug
Spring and everything. All of that stuff was like the Hillary Clinton's doing.
Yeah. And, you know, to what you're talking about, Alan, and the whole idea about, and what, Kaylee, what you were saying about the actor thing. I mean, I think that's exactly what Doug's talking about, just from the standpoint of being the actor playing that role. When you think of Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, George, both Bushes, and then Barack Obama, one of them can walk and chew gum at the same time, and the other four can't. You know, you never believed anything that anyone named Bush ever said. The dad looked good compared to the son, but when the dad was talking, no one bought him any more than they buy Hillary Clinton.
Oh, okay. So can I make a different analogy here? Like, you know, there's like George Bush is like the Arby's of presidents, right? It's like it's gross. You know, it's gross. They're not hiding it. Hey, do you want some gross shit? Whatever, right? Or, you know, or you can have the CEO, I'm sure the CEO of McDonald's or Disney or all these things, they are polished and they are, but I would argue all the more psychopathic for it. They're not, you know, just fumbling opportunists. You know, George Bush was he was a rich boy born into a powerful family who said, sure, I could fucking stand up here and do this and cool, good for me. And I'll do whatever the fuck you want me to do and I'll smile while I do it. It's different from someone who is, oh, you know, if I had to hear about Obama being a constitutional scholar one more fucking time while he did all these unconstitutional things is mind-boggling. So it's basically what you're telling me is you fucking know better.
Reagan,
you know better.
Reagan did
you're
the same.
You're smarter than that. You're smarter than that. You're polished than that. And then, so then you're telling me that you actually are okay with this. And
sure,
that
it only seems more premeditated in that way.
Yeah.
I'm a pragmatist, and I think Obama is a pragmatist. And so it's like, if he makes a deal with Iran, I think that's better than like John McCain's whole thing of just bombing them back in the Stone Age. And if he doesn't listen to like Netanyahu when he comes to like say the same things about like how we need to attack Iran, that's a slightly better thing than what a Republican president would have done.
Do you? So again, but just to be very clear on that point, Obama was supportive of those bombing tactics till there was outcry, and then turned around and changed his mind. He came out and said, "Hey, unfortunately, we need to do this. I don't want to do it, but we need to do it."
And then
I'm curious.
It's a red line. There was the red line in Syria. That's
how you
about,
felt
right?
about Reagan, Alan. Were you too young? Because
I was too young for that.
Okay, because that guy was warm. He was presidential. You know, he really, but same kind of thing where the left
that's Donald Trump.
Despised him as far as
no, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Ronald Reagan, and in my family, the people, and in the world that I knew, people did, you know, people thought that he was, again, thought he was a joke. Did not think he was presidential or, you know, he was Mr. Jelly Beans. He was the guy who, you know, he was sort of a dunderheaded warmonger. The way that he's been lionized in death by Fox and by the Republican Party is
but that kind of lionization was so my people, my family were definitely country club Republicans, and so I mean he was their guy. My grandma goes to the Reagan Museum and cries, you know, because those were the days, the glory days, because he was so reassuring and it felt like the world made sense. From right.
So can I ask one quick question going back to what I was trying to say here. So I would agree that right. So Trump and Reagan and Bush are the what did you call them the dunderheaded warmonger.
But this to is me that seems
I'm
like
celebrate.
No,
wait,
that's
wait,
so
wait,
different
question.
Though.
Can I
so
can
like
I
yeah
express,
go ahead.
Can I express my actual
you put them all in the
question,
same thing
and then you can answer. Yeah, can I do that? Cool. So I would agree the statement that these are like the buffoonish and yet all very frightening warmongering people, but we view them as foolish and all that. My question is not the level-headed, clear, just cold heart of the I'm the kind liberal with a smile on my face as I bomb the fuck out of your country. Does that not chill your bones just a little bit more or at least equally?
Equally. And again, it's one of those things about different things that you want a president for. Like on the policy side, I didn't get anything that I don't think I got anything that I wanted that I want a president to do out of Barack Obama. But another thing that a president does is set a kind of cultural tone. And in that sense, Barack Obama set a cultural tone that was, you know, and I hear exactly what you're saying. It lulls you into a sense of false security, and at the same time, it's nice to have to not like cringe when the president talks after 8 years of George W. Bush. Like that was it. Just listening to the man speak was its own kind of psyop. And I guess I'm hearing what you're saying is that there's a different psyop when the guy sounds really. You know, I got sick of him hearing Barack Obama talk after like his third Jimmy Fallon episode. But for a while, I was caught up in it. It sounded, you know, he's a good speaker, and as a campaigner, he was a transcendent campaigner. I mean, it was aesthetically, it was a glory to behold.
Is he really a good speaker, though, or is it just compared to so many others that he's just a little bit better? You know, like everybody says that he's so eloquent and so intelligent, and I just don't see it. I don't know. Do you guys really think?
Did you watch his 2004 speech at the Democratic Convention? Because I think that's where it comes from.
Probably, I don't know, that was so long ago. I'm sure I did, because I voted for him his first, when he first came up for election.
When he did that
I'm
race.
I'm sure I got all caught up in it, you know.
You know, when there, he thought there was like, maybe it was around the George Zimmerman thing, but he felt like he had this race speech where he came out and spoke about race in this way, and it was just like, it was the thing that Well, that Hillary Clinton could never do. She could never seize on a moment and then just speak to it. Whether or not it was like, you know, again, as Alan would say, sort of like subterfuge and, you know, using something to get, you know, to politically get his leg up so that he could, you know, get it, get into the country club, basically. But there is there he does have the quality of just being able to respond without waiting for, you know, without that sense that he needed to parse every poll and get five different speechwriters. Right. He has a voice that feels like his voice. And it did, again, there's Barack Obama the campaigner and Barack Obama the president, and they're very different. One is very satisfying, the other one isn't.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think he's very good at appealing to people's sentimental nature. That whether he's genuine about that or not, I don't know. I doubt it, but maybe he is. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Hillary Clinton doesn't have that ability.
I guess I can find sympathy with you in the sense of, say, like, reading the philosophical ideals of a Thomas Jefferson versus him getting in office and being like, well, I can't do that shit. I can't do the shit that I thought I was supposed to be doing. Being a completely different human being. You know, I guess that's the question of, do you think he was actually well-intentioned? I don't know. At this point, like, I couldn't see anybody stepping up to that stage and being like, hey, I'm the right person for the job. Let alone any corruption or manipulation of, you know, things like that. But just even the hubris, the will to power that at this point I'm so – if you there's – I don't think you – you know, if you put my grandmother up on that stage, I'd think, wow, my grandmother's gone batshit crazy. She wants to – you know. I don't know. Is there anyone that I could see that would be like, yeah, I'm the right person for this job?
So I – that's what's silly. So yeah, I don't know. At my job at work, just the trying to be a leader in the leadership role, you really have to – there is like this ego involved that you have the authority and that people trust your authority. You know what I'm saying here? Like, if you're in charge...
Totally.
People need someone to be in charge. They need a presence. They need a reassuring presence. And so Ronald Reagan was an actor, and he was trained to do that, and I think he was pretty good at it. W at least had an Ivy League... Yeah, I mean, so he went to Andover, he went to Yale, and he didn't seem that intelligent, but he definitely had some kind of charisma that really spoke to people off the cuff, not necessarily. It didn't seem like he seemed super presidential on camera. He always seemed like so unintelligent, but he at least had the bare minimum to make it through those Ivy League schools on a legacy type situation. But with Trump, this is all together.
Hey, Trump went to college.
Sure.
He has a degree in economics or something.
And I would actually say, anyone who is curious, you should watch George Bush's 2000 debate. When he's debating Al Gore during the 2000 election, his appearance is there. It's not like he comes across as very smart, but he certainly doesn't come across as good old boy stupid face. You know, it's like he was able to be intelligent when he needed to be. And sometimes I wonder if he just let his guard down and didn't care anymore, or if it was that he was playing the same way as Kaylee was saying about the actor, that Obama's acting out the role of the statesman. W was acting the role of the fool. You know, it's again.
Well,
it's
that's what I've always said.
What's that?
Well, yeah, he's the fool in the tarot trumps.
Precisely, yeah.
But I mean, could you imagine George W. Bush on Twitter?
No.
I mean, you can't imagine him laying down sick burns on anyone like Donald Trump.
But so then, Alan, with your viewpoint, I mean, so, like, I don't know how much agency these presidents actually have, even if there isn't a shadow government, because there are really powerful agencies that they're trying to wrestle into, you know, even, you know, there's the checks that are explicitly placed on them, but then also the, you know, the agencies. And they
sure.
They have agendas and momentum and histories and powerful charismatic leaders also.
But you know, there's a few things that I'll just say to that is, if Obama really was well intentioned, he has made no qualms about using things like executive orders when it struck his fancy. He could like to say, "Oh, they won't let me close Guantanamo." Fuck you. Fuck you. You could close it if you wanted to fucking close it. You know, you don't mind doing an executive order for something that with political points. I'm sure if you really fucking wanted to, you could fucking do it. The other thing is, you're commander in chief of the goddamn military. You could say, get your asses out of that country, instead of saying, hey, you know what? I want to invade 7 fucking more countries during my presidency. If you didn't want to invade 7 countries, or you wanted to pull out of more countries, you could do that. You have that authority as commander in fucking chief. Okay, so in this respect, no, I think he should be held completely accountable. And again, and to be clear, I'm actually holding him to a higher standard because I don't think he's stupid. It's not that I think he's worse or anything like that. I'm just holding him to a higher standard because I don't think he's fucking stupid. I think he knows full goddamn well, all right? And I think that he's clearly a fucking murderous psychopath.
Okay, and then I'm curious, what's the motive for this? Is it – I don't understand what he's getting personally out of that.
Power?
So – the 7 countries that you say we invaded, that was a power move on his part?
Oh, I say we invaded?
No, I'm just – I don't have the source, or I haven't done this research, so I can't say with any truth that what you're saying is true. I didn't run a tally is what I'm saying. But I'll trust you. I just – I want to understand why. You know, what was his motivation?
Well, what his motivation was to be – this is what I think of Obama – is that Obama is the good student. He got the job, and he was doing what the job description was. And the job description of America is look after our global interests, quote. And that means oil. It means all the stuff that, you know, that he knows is part of the job, and that, I'm sorry, there's a huge echo happening. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. So his end game is doing the right thing for a president to do and keeping the people, with Wall Street. Like, he went to Wall Street and said, I'm the guy who's going to keep you guys in business. So let me... because the people trust me, let me bail you guys out. You got to trust me to let, you know, to do these deals to bail you guys out. And I think that's, like, he's a representative of the neoliberal class. And, you know, I don't, you know, I would imagine there's some level of him feeling, I don't want to say lucky to be able to do that, but yeah. Like, he knows that what his historical impact is as the first black president. And I think if you're the first anything, there's a sense of, like, you want to do it. Like, you want to play by the rules. You want to, you know, you don't have the liberty to come in like Donald Trump and tear everything up. And even he doesn't. Nobody does, because.
Well, it'll be refreshing when, I mean, so Trump is there. He won't. Like what you're saying, Alan, that he's hiding behind this aura of sainthood and then doing all these despicable things. Trump is just going to do the despicable things.
Oh, precisely. Yeah, this is no. I'm no apologist for the Republican brand of psychopathic fucking murder. No, not at all. I just, you know, I think Andres, what you're describing reminds me of the, you know, it's basically, yeah, you know, we are a slave society, all right, that hasn't changed. The mechanisms of control are somewhat different or look somewhat different, but there's people working the plantation and there's people working in the house. And Obama took the comfortable spot inside the fucking house.
Well, I think of it more like every cool musician or movie star or anyone you think is cool and has integrity that ever signed a major deal, there are agreements in that mean that they are not they're not able to get on stage and say, you know what, this fucking Miller High Life thing behind me, Miller sucks. They're bullshit. Like, you can't do that. You think you're the Rolling Stones, but you cannot do that. You can't, like, if you want to be president, if you want to be signed to, if you want to be a Disney star, if you want to be any of these things, there are certain freedoms that you have and certain freedoms you don't have. And if you, like, so expecting expecting a president who gets elected by the Democratic establishment, which is so sort of heavily mind managed, you know, it's just like, I don't want to say that he couldn't. I'm just saying that being the good student, he knows what it takes not to get kicked out of Harvard, or, you know, there are certain things that he has to do and has to, and for him, again, there were double standards that he had to face up against. Again, not saying that that justifies the bullshit, but there are dynamics at play that are more complicated than just like he's taking the comfortable seat. He didn't really take, that's not really a comfortable seat. It's a pretty, you know, it seems like a highly uncomfortable seat. Anyway, Mose Allison is dead. Fuck.
Fucking Leon Russell died this week too.
It's funny. It's unless it's someone you really care about, I don't really care. But Mose Allison, I really care about. And he's old. He actually... Anyway, I just saw the post. Another one down.
I found the Leon Russell thing interesting, that he died in the week of Trump's presidency and in the year of... what's his face? David Bowie's passing. It's like a... You know, Leon Russell he looks like a fucking Allman Brother.
I thought he was in the band. Have something to do with the band?
No.
Did the band sing a song about him? Something about Leon?
Levon
Helms, that's who I'm thinking about, sorry.
Yeah. Levon Helms is from the band, and... Elton John sang about him, but yeah. No, Leon Russell, whatever. It was interesting. If you know the history of Leon Russell and what he was sort of trying to do from a sort of musical and sexual sort of activism, it's interesting. Like I said, he looks like the rattiest Southern guy. Married a black woman, tried to do the John and Yoko thing, really tried to elevate black musicians. You know, and just that sort of thing of like what I sort of see in that symbolically of again, the year of Bowie and the week of Trump, it's sort of just really interesting to me.
Gwyn Ifill, I don't know how to say her name. She also died this week. The PBS newscaster.
Fucking Leonard Cohen. What the hell? Leonard Cohen. How are you guys forgetting that?
Like Andras said, if they didn't matter to you personally. Yeah. Although, yeah.
Well, you know, Leonard had at some Chelsea Hotel. Chelsea Clinton? I don't know. Sorry. Continue.
Oh, I was just going to ask you what you thought about that SNL skit with, what is the woman's name? Kate something.
Kate McKinnon singing Hallelujah.
Yeah.
I did not watch it.
Okay.
I thought it was.
I heard it.
You thought it was what?
I thought it was like, well, I just think that SNL did a lot to normalize Donald Trump. And so, I don't know. I think they were full of shit. They've been full of shit through this election, this whole election. Again, like we're talking about the sort of.
Well, on the episode before that, they were talking about how like Donald Trump had no chance of winning and he was going to fail. And so, again, they were really normalizing like the conservative, like Clinton, more than anything else.
Yeah.
But they had Trump on as a host, remember, when he was still trying to establish his candidacy.
I think Fallon had him on too, didn't he?
Yeah, Fallon had him on too. I think those two were big in terms of making him seem like cuddly and cool. Hmm. Like they didn't have any of the other Republican candidates as hosts. And they didn't have Bernie on as a host. You know, they had Trump. The only presidential candidate that they had as a host was Trump. How is that not showing support and giving him a platform?
What about Hillary Clinton? I know that she did the Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. I know she did that as a PR stunt, but I don't know what else she did or if she was on any other.
Well, she was on, they had both her and Bernie do skits on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
Yeah, Larry David is Bernie.
But then they actually had Bernie as Bernie, like Bernie himself on an episode once. Just like they had Hillary as herself once. There was something else I was going to ask about Saturday Night Live. Huh. Never mind. Oh, that's what I was going to ask. Have any of you seen the movie Bob Roberts?
Tim Robbins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he plays a Republican folk singer, but he has like he's a Trump-like character, and there's a whole bit in it about a show like Saturday Night Live having him on, and all the, you know, the rancor behind the scenes about that. I don't know. Made me, when the Trump conversation made me think of it.
Well, I'm thinking it's getting near bedtime, but I imagine that we won't do another member hangout until probably the end of the year. Like 2017, we'll actually make it to 2017. Do we want to look ahead and speculate? Do you want to make
the
any
only thing I have
predictions, that, Alan? That,
since I was a kid, all right, you know, I grew up in New York. Andras, we had this conversation about Billy Joel, how ubiquitous that was up there.
Right.
And so, like, whatever. Since I was a kid, I have been fascinated. You know, like all those different things of like when you think, well, when I'm this age, there's a Billy Joel song called Miami 2017 that for whatever reason, since I was a child, I was like, that's really interesting. What, you know, it's like this post-apocalyptic song. And I always thought, like, how old will I be at that point? Like, what would my life be like at that point? For whatever reason, that year was that song sort of made me think in those terms in the way that other, like, future years didn't. Except for maybe 1999 because of Thundar the Barbarian, but whatever. Just to say, I've been waiting for 2017 for a long time, but with a really weird, you know, sort of since being a child with a really weird hesitation. Although I like the number 17, I love the number 17. I like the idea of the star card and all that sort of stuff. It's something that I've been sort of nervously looking forward to since I was very young.
So it'll just be an uneventful winter. He'll just kind of, well, maybe you should go to Washington, Syncbook News, Alan Abadesa Green on
site. I'm going to Miami. I'm going to Miami.
No, I'm telling you that we need a news source that we can trust. Unbiased. Alan, reporting live from the inauguration, the Trump inauguration. Here I am standing at...
Well, I mean, but Alan, you call all of this back in 2011 with the correspondence dinner where Obama had his birth certificate.
Oh, thank you! Jason, I want to kiss you so hard right now.
That's where it all started.
Yes. And you're the only person who realizes how fucking poignant that is. It's insanity. It is fucking insanity.
Because Obama had just killed Osama bin Laden, who was like his previous doppelganger. And so then he confronts Donald Trump, who is his next doppelganger. And then in the Egyptian myth, Set brings up this charge of bastardy against Horus, where he doesn't think he's the legitimate heir to the throne. So then, as you say, he has to, like, prove his birthright as the son of Osiris. And so we have this whole thing where we have these two eternally quarreling brothers, where it's like the king becomes his shadow self in the great Joseph Campbell modern myth cycle. So it's like first we have George Bush fighting Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, and then he turns into Hussein Obama, and so then Hussein Obama starts fighting Donald Trump, and before he just becomes Donald Trump as the eternally revolving king on the wheel of revolution.
Like looking at that detail now, I feel idiotic for not realizing that Trump would get it. It seems so obvious in that.
Right, because that whole thing, that whole dinner was just him, Obama, making fun of Donald Trump.
Okay,
and
so
how ridiculous it would be if Donald Trump actually became president.
Just to sort of like try and spell that out a little. So he's saying is right. So you have George Bush going after Saddam Hussein. The next president after him is Barack Obama, Hussein Obama. So you have this idea who then kills Osama bin Laden, right? And this even had like the news reporters messing up their names, and there's this idea that he's killing his shadow.
Well, yeah, but that was on the same weekend where he unveiled his birth certificate.
Yes. So what's happening is this is when Donald Trump is leveling charges against Barack Obama for being a Kenyan born or whatever, and his whole birth certificate thing. So on the weekend, it's literally. So now I have to look back. It's the same weekend. It's either the correspondence dinner might have been Friday or Saturday, and then the news of bin Laden's death was Sunday, I believe. But yeah, at this correspondence dinner, Barack Obama gets up and says, "Oh, Donald Trump wants me to prove my birth certificate. So not only do I have my birth certificate, I actually have a video of my live birth." And he shows a clip from The Lion King, right? So this is not only is this the as Jason was saying, it's the Osirian ritual of girding yourself with the skin of a lion to be reborn as the king and all that sort of shit, and just that it was that weekend that was what inspired me to want to do Suicide Kings. It was just like I knew this was like holy shit moment was because of that fucking goddamn correspondence dinner. But forgetting that, yes, he was responding to Donald Trump in that moment. So not only is he announcing himself as king after killing bin Laden, and as Jason points out, there was already a previous cycle of George Bush killing Saddam Hussein, then being replaced by Hussein Obama, and then Obama killing bin Laden, but then he's being replaced by Trump, the very man that he was presenting this ritual to. It's just so holy shit, man.
Well, yeah, so it's this like progressive like shadow integration where like if Obama was Bush's shadow, then Donald Trump is Obama's shadow.
Yeah. Back in 2007 and 2008, I had a friend who scared the ever-living fuck out of me. We were having like a really intense political conversation about the 2008 election, and he said to me, you know, you have to realize, he's like, Barack Obama is being presented. So if George Bush is standing up here as this warmongering, everyone hates him guy, and Barack Obama is getting up on the stage to say, I'm new and young and black and peaceful, and I'm liberal, and we're going to have civil rights, and we're going to fucking end the war, and all this sort of everything that he said, that he's getting on the stage, and whether he was going to, we knew he wasn't going to do it, but just the idea of like, he's like, if his marketing campaign is to be the opposite of George Bush, my friend said to me, he goes, just think about after Obama's out of office, when it's time to fucking get him out, he goes, that's the moment to be scared, because they will run the opposite of that. They'll say, hey, well, clearly this peaceful, civil rights loving gentleman, well-spoken gentleman, presidential, beautiful man, fucked things up. Now we need total opposite fascism. And this was something my friend said to me fucking 9-10 years ago, and has been honestly terrifying me since. And so that when this Trump thing was happening, it's all I could think about was my friend saying this thing. But anyway, so of course, right, this is I've been waiting for the shadow, negaverse, alternate dimension Obama to rear his head, and not putting it together that, right, that correspondence dinner was in retaliation to Trump. It's just so such a pristine, mind-boggling fucking specificity that it's just astounding.
What do you
call it? I know how to finish your book.
Yeah, I know. Holy shit, yeah.
But do you call that just an emergent archetype, or is that a synchronicity? What do you call that? The nature of the universe, or just the architecture of the universe?
You know, that weekend, I thought that crossed over from emergent archetypes into specific ritual. Now, I mean, I don't know, man. I thought that specific example was, I thought was a ritual, like an intentional ritualistic maneuver. I don't, and that may still be the case, but but did they plan out that and then we'll switch it up? I don't think like that. No, I think that,
well, it's all about the tarot sequence again, just like I said in my sync book piece. And his name's literally Trump, so it all goes back to the tarot sequence. And so the reason that I couldn't be sure who was going to win the election, because it's like, Trump is so clearly like the emperor card, and then like Hillary is so clearly the empress card.
Oh, because we're going to 2017 and we're expecting the star, but Saudi's not the star. We're getting the emperor.
Yes, so it seems. But see, like, the Emperor is also connected to the Tower.
Yes.
Like, yeah. If you lay them back to front or something like that, the Emperor and the Tower are connected. But, and if you look on the Book of Thoth Tower card, I mean, you've got this big mouth opening. It looks like Donald Trump's mouth.
It looks like Donald Trump's mouth. I'll have to
yeah, on the Book of Thoth, the Carly Tarot.
No, I can picture the card. I just don't know if I...
like
how much I just squint to see Donald Trump's mouth there. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm so following you 100%, man. For real, I'm just laughing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean the Emperor card is all orange.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is a characteristic color.
Fuck.
Did that image come through in the chat that I just sent? Can you guys see that? I don't know if it's...
Oh, yeah, I see it. I mean,
is it? Okay.
I have to download it. I'm trying to...
Oh, really?
I see, like, a little thumbnail.
Okay. On my end, you can click on it.
I can see it. I'm looking at it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was a weird thing that happened on, this was like the afternoon before, like the afternoon of the night of the election. And I was kind of like scrying, I guess. And one of, I guess it was like the last of Grant Morrison's Invisibles. And I didn't even really have a thing in mind. I just was sort of like, show me something, right? And I like open it up to this page, which kind of weirded me out because I was dead set on, I thought that the race was in the bag for Hillary, and this card really spoke of Trump to me. And then, of course, the next morning, I was like, oh, okay. I see what that page is saying, I guess. I don't know. So, Doug, I've had your whole, like...
sees this Washington Monument at the top. It even looks like a Klansman.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I didn't make that connection. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if maybe I'm just that's just what it looks like to me.
I don't, yeah.
Which
I don't
card?
Know. No, it's an image. It's a page out of a comic book that Kaylee dropped into the Skype chat.
Do you think?
Does it expand for you guys so you can actually see what it says?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
So say again, so you were just like opening up at random and this is what you landed on?
Right. It was just sort of like a weird, I wasn't even, you know, thinking something like what is the election going to result in? It was just a weird day and I just opened it up with the idea of just show me something. And now is the page I opened up to. I don't know, and then it made sense on all.
So I guess we switch into.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, the Man in the High Castle.
Right.
You know, Philip K. Dick.
Right. I haven't read his book or seen the series, but I have an idea of what it's about.
Oh, well, but, you know, like Hitler is ruling the United States.
Right.
Although it's hard for me to take Donald Trump as Hitler. It's just too much of a cartoon character.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is like just like a political cartoon come to life or something. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. When he makes... Yeah, I don't know. It seems like this is going to be a real interesting year. I'm already trying to pump the brakes.
But I mean, with Back to the Future and all, there is this whole, like, shifting into an alternate reality thing. Kind of as a subtext to everything.
Oh yeah, I keep
and
trying so to share
that. Really
that
really goes to like the Man in the High Castle, where it's like the Nazis won. it being like the alternate reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Biff Tannen reality.
Well, right. When it's another, right. It's clearly, so Cubs fucking won. Biff fucking won. Man in the High Tower. So Man in the High Castle, you know, it wasn't last year, but it was in the last few years. And then all the fucking, you know, it was so funny to me, people getting outraged over the ad campaign of Nazi symbols across America and the Statue of Liberty doing the Nazi salute. And it's like, oh, you're upset about the ad campaign, but not the actual policies, not upset about fascist policies. So this is probably a snarky comment. Well, it's clearly a snarky comment, but Doug.
Oh, sure.
And all you, you know, West Coast liberals, I'm happy to have you back on the side of people who are wanting something that, or like, I'd want you to be happy, of course, but I'm glad you are.
We're all playing on the same team right now.
Yeah, the small silver lining of this Trump presidency is maybe you guys will be like, next time we invade a country, you'll be like, hey, that's not cool. Maybe the next time there's something where the president's like, I think we can indefinitely entertain American citizens, you'll be like, hey, that's not cool. I'll be happy to have you guys on the team again.
Yeah, it's been a long 8 years.
It's been a long 8 years, yeah, for that.
I don't know. One other possible silver lining. I don't really know how true this is, but it seems like even for people that really did trust the mainstream media, it seems like that trust is starting to wane a bit. And I hope that that momentum continues full force into the future. We'll see about that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They really started drinking their own Kool-Aid. Not too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe even I did, because I, you know, I had no doubt in my mind what I thought the results were going to be, and clearly I was wrong about that. So, you know.
What's the big idea?
Yeah. Good question.
I don't know if you, I mean, I, not that it'll cheer anyone up, but if you go back, you might want to go back and check out, we on Radio 8 Ball, we had a question about what would it be like if Donald Trump was president? From the last episode that we put out with Sandman. And it's not a very positive answer. Oh, yeah. The song called Summer in the City When the Cops Are Lethal.
Oh, yikes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you do one for if Hillary was to win the presidency, or?
No one asked.
Well, so Ben Goray, in Olympia back in August, Ben Goray asked something about drinking the Kool-Aid.
Will it all come down to finally drinking the Kool-Aid?
Yeah, and then he was talking about how he was thinking of that question in terms of the inevitability of Clinton. I'm trying to remember what his answer was.
It was big idea. What's the big idea?
Oh, that's what's the big idea.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right, well, I guess that's the question that SyncBook News explores in this first introductory year. What's the big idea?
So you're trying to get me to make some.
Alan Green on that location.
Yeah. Touche.
I guess the concept I've keep coming back to is accelerationism, where we have to just like expand like right wing capitalism to its complete breaking point before we can get like the Hegelian dialectical antithesis of it to really emerge. And so like we really need someone to just like come in and like break everything. For like a real progressive movement to come out of that.
You mean just sort of like instead of letting the pendulum continually swing back and forth, like finally let one of the things completely implode on itself?
Yeah, I mean it's just like we have to get all of the like right wingness out of our system somehow. And so accelerationism is like we have to like just push it towards like the very as far as it can go before it can flip into its opposite. And that's the whole Hegelian dialectic.
Sure.
Emerged by these dueling principles. I don't know, just look up accelerationism as a philosophical concept.
Did Will Morgan leave like 5 hours ago?
I don't think he was ever here.
He was never here.
Yeah, I thought
You've
he
always
I heard
been
him
here.
I thought I heard him laughing maniacally at the beginning of the call.
That's
no,
weird.
Will can't do late night stuff. It's too late for him.
I guess I just have Will on my head.
I'm sorry. Will Morgan laughing auditory hallucinations. There's worse things
yeah.
you could have in your head.
I could have his malapropisms. Well,
yeah, we.
I feel like
calling
this feels this feels like it's winding down. People don't have as much to say about the end of the world as they used to.
But so does everything just happen as? I mean, so there's no glitches along the way. It's just. What do you guys think?
What do you mean?
I mean, so.
Seems like a lot of glitches. Mostly glitches, maybe.
Well, so like, so there's a large chunk of urban areas that are protesting. Does that
right.
just at some point fizzle out and stop, and then we just accept what happened, or does that continue for the next 6 months? Does that continue for the next 4 years? And then as he begins to create a team that's going to implement his vision, you know, what does that look like?
Right.
Oh, and
hey,
then,
Kaylee, as... someone in Richmond, did you? I appreciated all the stuff on Facebook that I saw. So I didn't know about the Richmond Marathon. I had no idea that was a thing.
Uh-huh.
That sort of caught me off guard when I woke up at 9 in the morning to people shaking like jingle bells and shouting
oh,
outside my window. What's that?
Oh, he said, oh, it's a thing.
Yeah. Clearly it's a thing. Yeah. I should know it's a city. I'm sure they have a marathon. Right. I just didn't know that was coming, but, it was funny. So a bunch of people were saying, so a bunch of people were complaining about the protests shutting down roadways just a few nights earlier and people were like how inconsiderate and you know, all this sort of stuff. And then it's like, but we don't mind shutting down the roads for joggers.
Right.
I'm just sort of curious what your thoughts of this is your town more than it's mine. What are your sort of thoughts on the reactions here or?
Well, I know that in general most people that do not run in the marathon are incredibly irritated by the marathon. However, I think that a lot of people, I mean, they obviously they do put out, not that I'm expecting you to know about it, but, you know, a lot of people, especially that live in the area that you do, know when those things are scheduled and, you know, have to figure out where to park their cars or, you know, kind of work around the thing. In terms of those same, and I know what comments you're talking about online, those funny comments about, you know, the people running the marathon being the same people who are really inconvenienced by the protests, you know, the night before. I don't know. Obviously there is a bit of truth to that. I don't know. I'm not really sure how I feel about that, because I know that there have been some instances, and not necessarily this city, but in other cities where, you know, there are emergencies that do happen. People, whatever. I don't know. I would hope that in a protest like that, people would be considerate if somebody does need to get through in traffic. I don't know. I wasn't there, so I don't really know what it was like. I'm not really sure what to say about that whole thing. I respect people's right to protest. I'll say that. But I was not there. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one to answer. Sorry.
That's a fit. Fair enough. No. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I'm just sort of curious if you had any thought on it. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. All right. Fine. Maybe I do have a thought on it. Here's a question that I have, is that I don't know. Like, what is the thing? So a bunch of people, I don't know how many even, blocked the highway, right? What was it, like the I-95 expressway or whatever? A bunch of people got arrested.
And, I think 95 and 64, like just north of me. Okay.
Okay. You know, it was obviously there were police there, a bunch of people got arrested, whatever. I don't know. What I'm wondering is, like, what that... Okay, so like, are you stopping cars and sort of like protesting at these cars? Is the idea that because you're on a highway, there's going to be obviously the police and the news are going to be called, and so it's going to call attention to your cause, whatever that may be. So is that the idea? Is that, you know, blocking a large highway sort of like gets more media attention? Is it, I don't know. Other than that, I'm not really sure, because otherwise you're just, I mean, you're blocking traffic of people that you don't know. And I don't know, maybe some of those people are Trump supporters that
right,
you know, and Virginia, you're an inconvenience to them by keeping them from getting home to their kids. I don't know.
Virginia even went to Clinton this year, and apparently doesn't usually vote Democrat. It went blue. So like, yeah. So there's like, and you're around Richmond, you probably don't, you're not stopping a lot of Trump supporters. I'm with you on that, the sense of, I'm totally down for protesting. This is a problem I used to have up in New York, even like Occupy Wall Street. So like, I used to work around Wall Street. I know what they were shutting down, what they didn't. I've been in, even before Occupy, I've been to a bunch of, during Bush, I went to a bunch of anti-war rallies. I went to a bunch of anti-Federal Reserve rallies, all in Lower Manhattan. And I was constantly frustrated that, you know, so people were doing things where they got permits, and then the certain things that weren't getting permits, but you couldn't get people to go to the places that actually fucking mattered. And it's like my thing is like, hey, if we go to, you know, the congressman's office, if there's fucking 400 of us standing here, or even 100 of us standing here, or there's 50 of us standing here, we all walked into a fucking congressman's office and demanded something and demanded some attention, you'd be damn sure you'd still get some media attention, and you'd actually get the attention of the person who you feel is doing you some injustice.
Sure, and you may even be able to have a dialogue with that person.
I don't, Precisely, yes. Yeah. Like, if you actually wanted to make change, if you wanted to make some sort of impact, you would do that. If you just wanted to make a show, you'd do something else. I understand your point. I have a lot of sympathy for that. It's always been a really frustrating thing to me.
Yeah. So, and you know, and I don't know, obviously there's like, they're bashing in windows of the whatever Republican office organizing Virginia Vote, and like here in Richmond, there's that, or I believe so, right? Or was that, I mean, I'm sure that probably happened in lots of cities, but I think that happened here, and the vandalizing of the monuments, that's happened before, but you know, people, there's like a whole other thing with those, obviously, but you know, I don't know. Mixed feelings.
Yep. Is probably mostly the Jefferson place. Davis Memorial got spray painted.
I think it was the Robert E. Lee, and you might be right. I can't remember what the other one was.
Well, if you normalize like a constant state of protest, then it becomes like this thing where people may not pay attention to you once he actually does something really awful.
Right.
It's like the boy cried wolf kind of thing.
Sure.
And the flip side of that, I will say, I totally respect and understand your point there. I will also say that, you know, again, as someone who feels like I've had 8 years of anti-establishment blue balls, I feel like I don't think it ever should have stopped. And part of me hopes that, you know, you guys said the whole normalization of Trump and all this sort of stuff, and you know, I guess he's just president now, and
well, it's already happening.
So
I'm thinking,
all right,
I'm in
so he's
denial.
A racist white supremacist, gonna, you know, talk about all these things he's gonna do. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. Like, there's something to be said for, I don't know, expressing that at no point is that ever okay. I don't necessarily see like protesting the election results. I don't think that's that, but protesting even proposed policy or anything like that. I don't know. I'm just, again, I totally understand what you're saying. And there's also that other part of me that's like, so do you just smile and keep your fingers crossed? And I don't know. As I said, I've been doing it for 8 years, and you know, I guess.
But so, can any president be good for you, Alan, or what would that look like?
What's that?
So, could you? I don't know that there could be a president for you.
No, I'm an anarchist. I don't want a fucking president.
There you go. Right? I mean, so I don't know what government system you would approve of at this point. So I don't know, you know, the discussion seems kind of silly.
Well, if I can jump in here.
Guess it's over.
Well, cuz we're not the good guys, right? We're not the good guys.
What do you mean? America's not the good guys, or is SyncBook's not the good guys?
America. SyncBook.
Because we're the good guys.
Yeah. SyncBook, we're the good guys.
And gals. I think that there is something like, yes, there's a certain class that is always going to be the critical class, right? The most liberal president is still going to need to be pushed by somebody to his left or her left to actually do whatever it is, to do the liberal things. So, yes, in some sense, no president is ever going to be enough or is ever going to be free of being criticized and pushed.
Well, Alan said the last 8 years. I'm saying, I would say all the years, right, Alan? There, you've never had a president that you thought you could get behind?
What I'm saying with the last – my point about the last 8 years is that this is the first – I felt like this was a specific situation in which we were not – it was not permissible to criticize because – You either got lumped in with the actual like xenophobic right wing douchebags, or you know, so like I couldn't complain to a Republican about Obama because they're like, yeah, I know he's in it, and I'm like, no, that's not why I'm complaining. You know, like I was saying, like unconstitutional stuff. Like Dennis Kucinich tried to get Bush impeached over going to war without congressional approval, right? That was why he was trying to get Bush impeached. Why the fuck did Dennis fucking Kucinich, why didn't he bring impeachment charges against Obama for invading multiple countries without congressional approval?
Why did that never happen? Precedent, there was the magic precedent that Bush set.
Right, exactly.
But it was. But again, like, we this. Well, that's another source.
Again,
do you trust
you're a constitutional? If your whole thing is that you're, you that was your thing, right? You're a constitutional scholar, then you know.
That's yeah, not right. How it works. Exactly. It's a contradiction.
So again, really frustrating. Really frustrating. Have the guy up there who's the constitutional scholar saying, "Oh, do I need to go to Congress to invade a country? Do I need to do that? I thought we didn't do that anymore." Anyway, so there's that.
Well, I don't think we've actually declared war since World War II.
Precisely. We just invade countries. We don't actually declare war. Precisely. My point is that
there were
impeachment charges brought against George Bush because of that. And my thing is like, yes, there is true racism and xenophobia of the right wing. Is that like their whole thing was like, we don't think he's born here, you know? That was the constitutional thing they were upset about. He needs to be a natural born citizen. We don't think he's from around here. Like, dude, if you actually wanted to impeach Obama, if you were a Republican and actually wanted to impeach Obama, you could. You could. He's fucking destroying the fucking Constitution in the exact same way George Bush was. And what would be hilarious to me, what I hoped for the last 8 years, I kept hoping that some fucking Republican would realize, hey, why don't we try and impeach this guy for invading a country without congressional approval, just like the left. Again, Dennis Kucinich tried to bring these impeachment charges against Bush. What if we did the same thing? And then the left wouldn't really be able to argue and all this other stuff. But no, they'd rather harass the guy because of his birth certificate. So clearly, they're a bunch of racist douchebags. My point, though, is that I couldn't complain to the right and I couldn't complain to the left because everyone wanted to defend the fucking guy of like, oh, come on, he's not that bad. Oh, come on. He's just, you know, he wants to close Guantanamo. But, you know, those Republican congressmen and senators just won't let him. Oh, he really, really wants to end the war in Iraq. He wants it so fucking badly. Every time he pushes the buttons and drops the bombs on the little kids, a little part of him cries inside. He really feels all torn up inside about it. And he's a great fucking guy. And look at about Jimmy Fallon. Isn't he funny? And he's awesome. And he's handsome. And we love him. Great fucking guy. Don't say anything bad about him. So I'm tired of that shit. That's what I mean about 8 years. It was impossible to criticize this fucker. And I'm just saying, I feel that we live in a country where we should never, never stop criticizing and never stop protesting and never stop being offended by the outrageous policies of our country.
Well, and that's another, just speaking to that, that's another possible silver. Well, I don't even know if it's a silver lining, maybe for me, just me personally, and probably for you too. But like the outrage that I've seen from the people who have been largely supporters of Obama for the last two terms, I hope that they turn that rage against him and they actually pay attention to what he does and what he says and what the actual actions are, the way that they did not do that. during the Obama presidency. You know what I mean? Like, when
yeah,
we said,
I mean, that's what
yeah,
I said
we've
before.
Yeah, we've missed you for the last 8 years. So, you know, maybe, I don't know.
People just did not think critically about, like, Hillary when she was accusing Russia of everything going on with her.
Yeah.
It's very easy for a hacker to email account. It doesn't require like the Russian government.
Right.
Gmail. It all requires is some really basic social engineering.
I'm not really sure she realized that though. You know? I mean, she's old enough that she didn't really, I don't know. I'm not sure that she was too privy to that fact. Whatever, it doesn't matter anyway because it got hacked, but
all right, 237 minutes. No, 2 hours, 37 minutes. I gotta work a double tomorrow. I'm calling my pull out here.
Well, that was pleasant.
It's good to know what a racist you are, Alan.
I mean, they tried so hard. Hi, Trump.
I'm just saying, Russia. I think this roller coaster like has some more bumps. That's all I'm saying. I think there's more bumps.
Yeah. They found one of Donald Trump's spam email servers, and it was sending spam to some bank in Russia, and they tried to turn it into this whole thing where like Donald Trump was secretly communicating with the Russian government, and it was just completely ridiculous for anyone who actually knew about anything about technology.
Yeah, it was stupid.
Like the people supporting Hillary just like completely swallowed it. They didn't even think about it.
Okay, well, you guys all have good nights and
no, and for the record, Douglas, no one's arguing with you that there's bumps ahead. I know this is
no, well, I think there are big bumps. I don't
Dude.
No, I'm not talking about the Trump presidency. I'm just saying getting to the Trump presidency. December 19th is a long way away.
January 19th.
No, December 19th is when he's actually elected. I don't know if that's going to happen.
You're talking about the Electoral College vote,
yes,
and then the inauguration.
We don't elect presidents. They elect presidents. We elect electors. They have one job to do. I'm just curious if they're really going to do that job. I would think so, but I'm not convinced.
I mean, yeah, that's a whole other conversation. I mean, for what it's worth, yeah, that'd be a really interesting. And yeah, for what it's again, I don't. If it was like, oh, they gave it to Hillary, that
no,
would be outrageous.
It could be worse, right? I don't. Just the.
But at the same, but yeah, the idea of like we have this system in place, you know, and then if it gets used. How insulting is that? And at the same time, is that a relief? And yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Fucked up world. I'm glad I get to share it with you fuckers, though.
Okay, yeah, and Billy Joel. All right, you guys have a good night. Bye-bye.
See you in Miami.
Hey.
They all bought Cadillacs and left their long ago. They held a concert out in Brooklyn. They turned our power down. They drove us underground.
Still survive.